Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I'm coming to you live on this July 18th evening. I have a guest tonight with whom I share many ideas, and we're going to discuss some of these. He is Rodney Martin, a father of five of German and Scottish ancestry. After a career in both government and private management, he has been devoting his time to correcting the historical record, as he puts it, mostly from the period covering World War I to the end of World War II. He's been active in that in a number of ways, including engaging with those who actually lived through this period of time. And as I, you know, have also brought people on this program who lived through those events. These are our own survivors from whom we should be gathering their stories and creating an honored place for them. We know that there are other groups who have their survivors, and we certainly have many, many survivors, and I don't think we're doing enough with their stories, but there are books, and there is a lot of information out there, but I don't think it doesn't get the attention, of course, that some of the others do. Well, Rodney is now planning to intensify his efforts, and we're going to talk about that a little bit before we turn to some special topics like homeschooling, which is the only way that we can preserve our European culture and social norms free of Marxist political correctness that controls our societies today. With that, I'm going to say hello, Rodney, and welcome to the Heretics Hour.
Well, hello, Carolyn, and thank you for having me on the show. And I listen to you all the time, and I didn't think I'd ever get to be a guest, so I'm pinching myself to make sure that I'm awake.
Well, I'm very pleased. I was very glad that I could call on you and that you are willing and able to come on, and I know this is going to be really interesting. Is there anything you want to add to the little introduction I've given you?
No, I think you summed it up quite nicely, and I think that this, we talked about intensifying the efforts. I think that this is something that is becoming and should be considered a duty by all people who are able, and those that may think that they're not able, I think they should engage in some self-reflection and look at their children and look at the future and really think about, where we're at in the world and what might be.
Great. That sounds great. Now, would you like to tell us a little bit about what your plans are and maybe some of what you've done in the past?
I think a few minutes. Sure. Well, you know, I've shared with you, Carolyn, I've always copied on some of the editorials, you know, that I have published, and some of them have been very thought-provoking and very confrontational, but they've all been fact-based. I think I've sent you several of you, the one that I pinned on Francisco Franco and how, had it not been for National Socialist Germany and Italy, there would have been a Soviet satellite in the heart of Western Europe 20 years before the Cold War. And, you know, that's fact. There is no way that can be denied, refuted. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of folks that, you know, delighted in calling me a lot of names. But the historical accuracy of that is beyond dispute. So, you know, there is a lot of history is on our side. The facts are on our side in this endeavor. So what I had decided to do was to create a nonprofit educational endeavor, get a website up, and focus solely on some very thought-provoking and you can say confrontational, but, you know, I don't consider confrontation a bad thing. That is how the Greeks' educational system functioned for the most part. When someone feeds you a line of rubbish, you confront them and say, prove it. Tell me why. convince me. But to, you know, to go further and to have a series of seminars and speakers and engage, as you just very well outlined, our survivors. Now, you've heard of Spielberg's notorious Shoah project, where he has gone and documented, quote, his side. Now, what's interesting is if you were
thousands,
to get into those Shoah
interviews,
if you were to get into those, people would be surprised at what people would learn, because he only selectively releases the stories that he finds sympathetic to his propaganda and his inaccuracies. There's a lot of surprising testimonies in a lot of those recordings, which will never see the light of day. But that's another story for another time. I think what I would like to see us do is to develop our own database of testimonials. And like we said, engage. And there's still survivors. Now, we're losing them. We're talking about people in their mid-80s and some cases 90s. And get their testimony. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of people who lived through that period of time that are willing to engage in testimonials and say, hey, that's just not the way that it was. We lost a very, a great spokesman in Hans Schmidt recently, who wrote, eloquently and corrected the record. We lost him, but he documented his experiences. He did correct the record. I think that there is an opportunity to do that, and I'd like to get a real honest effort to document our own survivors' testimony and document that evidence and testimony as to, as I'd indicated in the correspondence with you, what was life really like from the firsthand account, and not have it clouded by the political agenda, which is basically nearly all of what history is taught today. Look at a elementary school or a college or a high school textbook. It's all political agendas. And with that, get into the arts and the culture. I mean, there was a tremendous cultural revolution, positive, that took place during that period of time, where you actually had the decadence and the pornography cleansed from culture. And you to see that, and a lot of that has been suppressed. And if you look at the film and the cultural works that were produced, and to bring that and to reintroduce that into study and thought and discussion, and people were to see, that is a window into what society was like during a certain period of time. So I'd really like to focus on that, and that's going to be a part of the project that I'm going to be undertaking as well. It'll start off, like I say, as a website with some writings and some essays, correcting the record. My first one I've been working on for quite some time. I discussed it with you a little bit, and that has to do with essentially the cultural genocide and using what is called Germany today as an example. Germany today has a tremendous case of Stockholm syndrome. They actually became and identified with their conquerors and occupiers, and the true Germans are essentially foreigners in their own lands. You can make the case the occupation zones of the Western powers were far more brutal than the Soviets, and that's a controversial statement, but let me quantify it, and that when the wall came down and the what was the former GDR was absorbed into the the Federal Republic of Germany, there was a cultural divide second to none. The materialism, the decadence wasn't there. Now, it's very interesting to look at what happened when the unification took place, and looking at what took place, the quote-unquote re-education. There's no other word for it. It was a cultural genocide, and so nothing surprises me
a lot of more damage was done to the psyche of the German people in the Western zone than in the Eastern zone.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I don't think there's any psyche left. And I tell you who said it best. And I found this quote, and it is just absolutely outstanding, and it was Hannah Reich, and we all know who she was. She flew into the bunker at the end of the war. She went on and had to have a stellar career after the war, and was even invited by President Kennedy to the White House. A lot of people don't realize, if you go on the internet, you can actually see her in the Rose Garden at the White House about 1962, I believe, with President Kennedy. And she had a great quote, Carolyn, that said, "And what we have now in Germany, land of bankers and car makers, even our great army is gone. Soldiers wear beards and question orders. I'm not ashamed to say I believe in National Socialism. I still wear the Iron Cross with diamonds Hitler gave me. But today, in all Germany, you can't find a single person who voted Adolf Hitler into power. Many Germans feel guilty about the war, but they don't explain the real guilt we share, that we lost."
Yeah.
That's an interesting quote. She was outstanding. And I think there's
something. Is she, and you know, she did come to the United States at least once or a few times. I did write a long article about her, but I've just recently gotten her book, one of her books, which I hadn't read yet, which I'm going to read. But she, you know, she would never denounce National Socialism, and she would never accept the denazification. And there were quite a few. There were a few that did that. And then there were some who did go through it so they could be released from prison, but they didn't really mean it, you know.
I would submit that more did not renounce than did. But, of course, the media, you know, the political correctness, the Marxist media, always makes more of the traitor than they do of those that hold to their principles. I'll use another example. Find me one survivor, there probably aren't any, who was from Stalin's inner circle that was remained as loyal to Stalin to their dying days in their 80s and 90s as those such as Rojas Misch and Hans Bauer and those that stayed up until April the 30th, 1945. You won't find them. I dare say that there's probably not very many of Churchill's inner circle that remained as loyal to him as well. There is a difference, and the difference is striking, and that is a story that has always fascinated me, going back even as a young person. You know, what was being presented in the quote-unquote conventional public educational institutions just didn't pass the smell test. And I always was one that wasn't afraid to ask why and do my own research and always spent my time talking to seniors. When I was at university, I was blessed to be able to do a lot of research and talk to folks that that were there. And there's no better resource than to talk to people that were there, if you can get them to
I hate to interrupt you, but you've been having a correspondence with one of these persons. Will you want to talk about that for just a minute?
I've had some correspondence and exchanged letters and mementos and gifts with several of what we'll call people that were there. I actually received some very nice photographs from Rojas Misch, and I sent him some recordings of the original Lunch Concert radio programs, which I'm sure that he listened to quite frequently on Sunday evenings as a soldier. Of course, he is in very, very poor health now, and the most recent letter I received from him, he was very apologetic. He sent me some more photographs, some very nice ones, and indicated that he was just he was curtailing back his activities. And of course, there was a recent news article where he had given his last press interview and he had announced that he was terminally ill. That actually was not a secret, but when you're up in his age, and bear in mind, this is a man that was shot in the chest and the wound was just a few not very far from his heart, and he survived that and went on and survived 10 years of torture in Soviet captivity. So he's the last witness, as he calls himself, and really a hero who has never changed his position, changed his views, and he's a very fascinating individual. I also hear in the United States there are actually several Wehrmacht and Luftwaffe veterans that I've corresponded with, and they are a delight. they are a delight. That has been very much a fascinating experience to, you know, document and record their experiences. One in particular was a veteran of the Eastern Front who saw the horror stories that, you know, I've written about when in the latter stages of 44, early 45, and saw the war crimes of the Red Army that has never been called to account for.
Now you have all this.
And he saw these as a boy soldier.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You have this on tape?
I have a few on tape, but most of them are written from from my notes.
But you have it. But you have this material.
Oh, sure. And this goes to that project that I've talked about, you know, doing, you know, I do not like using that word Shoah project, so I have to come up with something. Something that is a little more balanced because, you know, there's people, you know, particularly those on the left like to say, well, there are two sides to every story, but they only like to hear one. Theirs. Well, mm-hmm. I've never been one to buy that.
Yeah. Well, okay. That was very interesting, Rodney. Let's talk a little bit about homeschooling because you have mentioned to me a number of times, and I keep kind of forgetting about it, that, you know, you are the father of five, which just impresses me right there, and that you homeschooled your children. Now, tell us to what extent you did that and how much you were involved and how old they are now. How did you manage that?
Well, how do we manage it? Well, it's been a great experience, and we made that decision for a whole lot of reasons. Well, first of all, the ages of my children are 16 to 9, and we have homeschooled them. We did, and I will say there was an interlude where we tried the public school system for a brief period of time, and it took us a prolonged period of time to undo the damage. But we made the decision for several reasons. One, you know, the cultural aspect. Two, the safety aspect. And three, the education aspect. Now, that doesn't mean in, you know, any order of importance. All three of them are equally important. They all go together. Safety for the main reason, because the public schools are any public school, and they are a prime example of the third world now. And you would not want to put your children into that type of environment. You know, you just do not want to send your kids off to school not knowing you're going to get a call or a knock on your door that there's been a school shooting. I mean, it's just it's just incredible. And, of course, being in California, Carolyn, it gets worse by the day. And, of course, the cultural aspect, Governor Brown just signed a bill where they have to teach homosexuality, and that's a non-starter. But they were doing things far worse than that before. And, of course, the education, you know, wanting to be involved in the education and to see to it that the education is quality, if not taught to the test.
So you're currently homeschooling your children. You're currently doing this.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And we trade off. We trade off. You know, we have a system, and you know, we basically essentially have almost a year-round system with intermittent, you know, breaks through the year, and we, you know, we do focus the focus is on the core reading, writing, and arithmetic. I want my children to be very proficient and trained and excel in those basic skills, and then of course I want them well versed in who they are and where they came from. You will never get that in the traditional public schools because that doesn't count. They do not believe that your culture matters unless you are multicultural, unless you are from someplace else.
For sure.
And so we found that to be quite honestly repulsive. And so that is why that we made that decision as well.
So is your wife a stay-at-home mom with five kids?
She has, she has been for nearly 20 years.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay,
so we've been blessed in that area.
What now? How are your children responding to it?
They actually respond to it quite well. They actually prefer it, because actually you'll hear it now, Carolyn. You will hear the old stereotypes and the arguments that you're missing out on the social mm-hmm. elements. Well, I say, what are those? I mean, teen pregnancy, gang shootings, stabbings, knifings. Tell me what they're missing out on, as opposed to I can take my kids to museums. They can be in scouts and certain troops, you know, that we choose from. They do not have to learn homosexuality. They do not have to, you know, that is just so bogus. They can participate in religious activities and garner social interaction that way.
Yeah, do they participate in sports?
Yes, there are intramural sports. There's city and stuff, you know, soccer leagues and stuff of that nature they can participate in. But the bottom line, too, is it's their choice as well. If I had, you know, if one child excels and wants to be a football player, that's his choice. If the other one wants to focus on going and start working and doing vocational tech and things of that nature, that's his choice. The public school system puts an enormous amount of pressure on boys to be jocks and to have empty heads and doesn't prepare them for the future. In the meantime, they're filling their head full of political correctness. And they put a lot of emphasis on girls to be, throw tradition to the wind and to, I'll just leave it that way, to throw tradition to the wind. That ends up in, you know, promiscuity is A-okay, experimentation is A-okay, miscegenation is A-okay. You know, if they were to focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic as they do and all of those other things, we'd have the best schools in the world, because we certainly spend enough and per pupil spending.
Well, it's, you know, as my opinion is that it's more about the quality of the students than it is about the schools and the teachers.
Absolutely.
Although the teachers' quality is also becoming very, you know, mixed.
Here is my answer when I hear somebody knock homeschooling. I said, if you want a school that gets the best bang for the buck as far as per pupil spending, curriculum, one-on-one attention, and child, you know, pupil development, come sit in my classroom. Because essentially, Carolyn, what we have adopted, and there was a study out, and I wrote an editorial, and I may have sent you a copy about this, is we model our homeschool dynamic on the Finland model. In Finland, Carolyn, they spend less class time, shorter school years. They start later in the year, and every year they blow the charts out as far as performance. About a year and a half ago, over 120 nations sent representatives to Finland to figure out what they were doing right, including the United States. It's a more relaxed atmosphere. Not every child is alike. And, of course, you know, they say, well, Finland, I had a liberal tell me, well, in Finland they don't have the multiculturalism we do. I said, yes, thank you.
That's it. That's right. That means a whole lot. That's probably
And neither does my school. So, but that's kind of a model we looked. My wife and I looked at what they were doing, how Finland approached learning, the teacher, the interaction, how they approached the learning environment. And that's kind of the model that we've adopted from the homeschool perspective. There is still structure. You know, contrary to what some people think, the TVs aren't on during class time. There's none of that. You know, there's a structured class time. If a certain amount of classwork is not done during the class time, it has to be made up in the evenings and on weekends. You know, there's lab experiments. And then, there's the cultural,
the
cultural component.
How do you handle science?
Well, the program they use, you know, we use both, you know, regular hard copy curriculum, and then we use online curriculum for science, and then we go to the hardware store and we get the science and the materials, and we build science projects. And I can tell you, sometimes they take up a lot of room in my basement, and sometimes they're rather small and can fit in the refrigerator. Sometimes they work out quite nicely, Carolyn. Sometimes they go awry. I got something growing right now from my 16-year-old, but I'm not sure what it is.
You know, it sounds to me like you're working harder than they are. You must be working very hard at all this.
I am having the time of my life right now. It is really because this all means something. This mm-hmm. actually means something. And I tell you this, I think the topic of our program was how we can make a difference. And I think this can be it. Take your children back. Do not give your children to this Marxist political correct system. Take your children back. At the same time, develop yourselves and clearly and from a clear and intelligent point of view, debate your issues. Educate yourselves and get out there in the arena and engage.
All right. Well, that's very good. Okay, we're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back in a few minutes to continue.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Also defending their position today, Rupert Murdoch, his News Corp empire under increasing scrutiny and allegations about its journalism practices on both sides of the pond. The UK scandal has spread to the US with an FBI investigation into whether 9/11 victims' voicemails were hacked, and also with the resignation of the Dow Jones CEO, who was one of Murdoch's reported right-hand mans. And the fate of Fox News is now up for debate, even despite News Corp's last earnings report showing falling profits for News Corp overall. Fox News has been a shining light. It's posted double-digit gains in advertising revenue, just to give you one example of that. Now, veteran journalist Afshin Ratanzi, he's an award-winning Middle Eastern affairs correspondent. He said what many could be thinking in an interview with RT. Listen.
So Democrats have nothing much to do, but they all hate one particular influential cable channel, Fox News. And I'm hearing that if the 9/11 victims have been hacked by subsidiaries of News Corp, then Fox News is finished.
That's what he told RT earlier. Now, News Corp has lost billions of dollars in its market cap just in the first few days that this scandal broke alone.
Very quickly, if you could answer another question, because I'm curious about this. You know, the price of gold today is $1,580. The dollar during these last 3 years was devalued almost 50%. When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
Well, this is a fantastic video clip because it shows you, really, now, 40 years after the closure of the gold window, it took 40 years for wonks and policymakers and Fed chairmen to completely disassociate money from gold in their minds. And this is the root of the global problem, is that they think that their academic theories can solve problems of the global economy. And we heard this from Christine Lagarde recently. Her response to the European crisis is to simply create more debt. This is a typical response of a Bernanke or an academic who their job is to come up with formulas how to increase the debt load. And they have lost touch with the reality of gold. And what's going to happen is that the market itself will impose the reality by crashing the fiat currencies more than they've already been crashed. This is why we've got our price target of gold now set to $10,000.
We'll be right back. Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with my guest for tonight, Rodney Martin, and we've been talking about homeschooling. And now I want to bring your attention, Rodney, to an article that I just saw today that someone sent to me, and I have did send it to you also, and that is about the two daughters of April Gady, who were, they were singers. They were called Prussian Blue, and now they're 19 years old. And it says that they have rejected they were homeschooled by their mother, I guess, or by whoever else was around. And but they've now and it's very understandable because they're 19. They're finally getting going out in the world. And now they say, oh, hey, you know, we kind of like a lot of this stuff after all. So which they were, you know, never allowed to participate in too much, I guess. So now they say they love diversity. And they don't have the same beliefs that they used to have. And, you know, this can happen no matter how you bring your children up. They are individuals who can very likely at some point decide, well, I think I'm going to reject a lot of this and I'm going to go in some other direction. You have any comments on that? It's no different than if you're a very staunch Republican saying you bring your children up as Republicans. And as long as they're living at home, they think they're Republicans too, and they go along with everything. Then at some point they go out into the world on their own and they change to Democrat. You know, that can be traumatic for some people.
Well, sure. I would venture, and I have no knowledge as to, on the homeschooling. I'm sure that April did an outstanding job. Education-wise, I think this may be a case of age appropriateness. I do believe that it is as part of the homeschooling experience. This is where we talk about, the social outlet and such. And of course, you hear the multiculturalism in the public schools. Well, you know, the multicultural aspect in the public schools, they sure don't take students down to Compton or South Central LA and show them what multiculturalism really is. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, in the homeschool experience that, when we teach our children, we teach both sides. We do that on purpose. We say, this is what the proponents, the Marxists say. This is their spiel. This has been our experience. Mom and Dad have been around 40 plus years. This is what our experience has been, having seen it firsthand. Now, we've also been very beneficial to be able to travel quite a bit. And of course, being able to do that, your studies go along with you. And we've been able to take some detours. And I have been able to show my children the results of Marxist political correct multicultural policy. So, I can't say that what happened to the Prussian Blue Girls won't happen with, I have five. April has those two plus a younger child. I can't say it won't happen. I have five children. One might turn out to go and say, if Dad's for it, I'm against it. Mom and Dad's for it, I'm against it. Mm-hmm. But we have tried to look at that and at least prepare them and say, okay, if you're going to do that, at least you're going in eyes wide open and we prepared you. Everybody has, I have a philosophy that everybody has a right to succeed or fail. It's up to you, but we have an obligation as parents to make sure that our children are ready, they're educated, and they know the impacts and what may happen as a result of buying hogwash.
Yes.
So we don't candy coat. We basically say, this is what the Marxists say. Here, and in some cases, we show them this is what has happened as a result of what they have preached. Mm-hmm. Choose for yourself. Choose wisely. I hope and pray that it never happens. Granted, every parent hopes that their children will follow lockstep. That doesn't happen. I actually turned out to be more extreme than my parents. My parents were far from liberal, by the way.
Yeah. Well, all right. And you know, you never know. They're saying this now. They're 19 years old. They're, you know, learning new things, and you never know. In 10 years, they might be right back where they were.
I suspect, Carolyn, in less than that amount of time. I suspect the first rough incident, it'll click in and say, "My Lord, Mom was right." And I hope it's a mild incident. I just hope and pray that they do not get wrapped up with the wrong multicultural crowd, because there's a lot of these people that travel in those liberal Marxist crowds that love to take advantage and manipulate young white girls. And I have two sons and three daughters.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We've had some problems with the server. This has never happened to me before on my program, and I didn't notice it on any other programs here. But we are back now. Rodney's here connected too, and we're going to continue where we left off, and we're going to go 10 minutes longer than normal so we can do our full show. And Mike Connor says he will kind of paste it all together for the archives. So let's see, Rodney, we were talking about this this book, and I've got the book now up here. It's called Sexual Violence Against Jewish Women During the Holocaust. And it's and the thing is that the CNN had a long about 10 pages on their website there, reviewing and talking about this book. As you put it, that, you know, they were really pushing it, but I don't think it's going to go over very, very well, because it's just an ugly story.
Well, you know, Carolyn, the fact that they had that up there for over a week, I think longer than that. And what a bunch of balderdash, because, you know, there was sexual assaults in the camps, and they were by the Red Army when the Red Army came across those camps in Eastern Europe, and that's one of those statements that is proven. Not only did they sexually assault the female inmates in the camps, they also sexually assaulted their own POWs, Russian female POWs.
Well, what about during before the liberation, so to speak? What was going on? You know, the men and women were separated all the time, so there wasn't too much opportunity. But I'll bet there were a lot of people in the camps that wanted sex if they had an opportunity for it. You didn't have to assault anyone.
Well, you know, considering that there were these special decrees in 1935, Carolyn, you know, and, you know, the whole tenet of the political system, it is just absolutely absurd. Not to mention that every buddy in the German military were given certain codes of regulations.
Oh yeah,
that were put in their code book.
I don't believe German soldiers or German guards or SS would had any intention or any desire to rape these Jewish women in these camps. They weren't in the best of shape, you know. I mean, they weren't being able to fix themselves up or anything. And then
typhus was rampant in those camps.
Oh yeah,
typhus was rampant in those camps.
But
and
I haven't read the book,
convinced.
So I don't know what these women are saying, who was doing what to whom, actually. I think a lot of it is dreaming. You know, they're dreaming.
I'll tell you, Carolyn, I am more concerned with the 2.5 million German women, elderly ladies, and children who were raped by our allies, the Red Army, some of which were so traumatized, gang raped by sometimes up to 25 and 30 Soviet soldiers, and they were so traumatized that they threw themselves into ice-cold rivers and either froze to death or drowned. And to this day, if there are interviews with these women, they are still carrying this with them. There's been no recourse for these women. In some cases, in a lot of cases, they were forced to bear Soviet soldiers' children, raise them, and you know, they were ostracized, and you know, most of them lived in the former GDR. And then when, you know, not too terribly long ago, there was an effort, and this was an article on Der Spiegel, and there was actually a video made. There was some efforts by these now males and females in their 50s to find their Soviet fathers. Some of the statements by these Red Army veterans saying that these German Fraus just gave it to them was just to talk about a brutal thug rapist making these statements. You know, we see rape, you know, rapists in courts of law make these statements and we immediately want them executed. And yet these Soviets were allowed to make these statements and get away with it. And these women, you see these elderly women carrying this to this day. And of course we have this German government that will do nothing for their own people. But then again, like I said, my premise is this is not, as far as they're concerned, these are not their people anymore. The Allies are the Americans are their people. The Americans are their people. The British are their people. And those Germans that dare say, I don't think this is accurate, those are foreigners to the Berlin government.
Germans are supposed to think of themselves as Europeans and not as Germans. And they a lot of them have really fallen for that. They're very comfortable with that. They want to be Europeans. Yep. They don't want to be Germans. But, you know, another thing about this book that I just have to mention is that I'm looking at it on Amazon and the cover of it. It's just so ugly. I mean, it's not even gruesome. It's this ugly artwork, typical Jewish, horrible artwork that would turn anybody off from buying it. I mean, unless you're a masochist.
Carolyn, remember the cartoons from World War I of the Hun, the German soldier with the baby on the bayonet? I mean, they've been doing this to German people.
Yeah, but this isn't even
for
that.
Almost 100 years.
This is just something that is this horrible kind of modern art that's just gruesomely ugly. And recently, I was looking at some sculptures that are in the concentration camps that have been created by Jewish artists, I guess, and communist artists. Jewish and communist art. Communist art is ugly. It's always been ugly. Mm-hmm. Everything the communists, their buildings and everything are ugly. And these monuments that they've put in these camps for themselves, are just ugly. They're ugly. They don't know how to make anything beautiful.
Can I touch on that really quickly, Carolyn?
Sure.
Another example of the Stockholm syndrome that I've alluded to in this essay that I'm writing is almost in every what is now free Eastern European country, Latvia, Estonia, they have taken these Soviet war memorials and literally thrown them in the trash, put them by the municipal landfill, except Germany. In East Berlin, there are still four or five huge Soviet war memorials that the Berlin municipal government maintains and takes better care of these old Soviet war memorials, knowing that these same troops that they honor raped and murdered 2.5 million German women.
I saw them. I was shocked.
They take care of those with German tax dollars.
Yes.
Now, if that doesn't say something, I don't know what does. Matter of fact, the current German government takes better care of those war memorials than the former GDR did.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating.
Well, you think I was German. I am German, but you think I was, if I lived in Germany, I mean, I don't know. I can hardly stand it myself. I just get so outraged. That's why there are a lot of a lot of books, and not as many as the Jews have, but we have a lot of our good people who have talked to all of these victims, German victims, and have written it all down. And there's a lot that was documented during the war by these commissions that the Wehrmacht created to get the stories and get everything straight about what was being done to the German people here and there. And it's all there. But it doesn't get much attention, and we need to get more of our survivor stories. You know, not the people who necessarily were harmed, but just the people who lived then, and also get this stuff out and spend more time putting this in front of the public's attention.
We have to be better organized. We have to get our testimonials out. I think that's an acceptable word. We have to get our testimonials out, and we have to not be afraid to be called names. And when they call us these names, we have to confront them right away and say, justify that. Tell me if what I'm saying is inaccurate, prove it.
I'm with you 100% because a lot of people, what they want to do is this, I'm sure this is what you're saying, they want to walk away. They want to say, well, I don't want to argue. Well, I don't think we should argue. Let's not argue. So let's, just agree disagree, you know, and I won't do that. And I can't find, and I usually end up, upset, you know, sounding like I'm some kind of a rude person who's demanding, people think like I do.
Well, you know, we just need a few more, but we need to be organized and we need to get our facts out and we need to be committed. We just need to be committed and we just need to not back down. And, you know, I've sent you several of the editorials and that I've penned and published, and I have not had a window broken. I have not had people confront me on the street. They've come up and said, wow, that was pretty strong. And at the same time, they said, but it was true. But I have a reputation of not backing down. I'm firm in my convictions, just like you are and just like we all should be. And if you're firm in your convictions and you back your argument up with reason and fact, you'll actually gain respect. And, you know, this facade that our foes have, the best solution for a bully, Carolyn, is to punch him square in the nose, and you'll see him, you won't see him very much. We need, in an intellectual manner, punch these bullies in the nose and say, we're just not going to put up with this anymore. We get to play in the schoolyard, too.
Yes, yes. Well, boy, we really do think alike, Rodney. I didn't know we were as much alike as we are now that we're talking here together. And I think that a lot of these people who are so uncomfortable with confrontation, they just don't want to help out. So I don't know how many people we can find who can do it. But that's what
in the past, Carolyn, people have lost jobs and livelihoods and stuff, but that stuff's not working so much anymore either. I will say I am optimistic because we do see cracks in this game that they have played. You know, it's just not sustainable what has happened in Europe and here. We see the Silesians now wanting autonomy in Poland, which means they didn't get all the Germans out of Poland as they thought that they did. We see that happening. What happened with the borders and the eastern borders of Germany as such, it's just not sustainable. I think what's going to happen is what happened with Czechoslovakia, the Soviet Union and such. It will eventually happen. It's just going to take longer. And they're going to need to have a real German government, and that won't happen until after this current generation, this 50-ish age generation dies off, these people that hate themselves. Because the generation, I think, coming up behind them, I'm not convinced they hate themselves as much as this current generation, and that's where we have our opportunity. The current generation is a waste of time. I think the generation coming up behind this generation that has drank the Marxist political correct Kool-Aid and drank it by the gallons, I think they're a lost cause. But I think the generation coming up behind, I think we have an opportunity. I just don't think it's sustainable.
Well, that's really very encouraging because, you know, as soon as you start talking about some of these things changing, boy, these people are going to get – they really get nervous. They really get upset. Well, then they're going to come up even stronger, but then, you know, that means that their backs are against the wall. And
They're acting like the old Soviets were when the Soviets were going broke and were near collapse. They ratcheting things up. You know, you got Elie Wiesel running around that fraud saying that we need to modify our constitution in the United States, keep free speech, but ban Holocaust denial. Well, you know, I don't need this foreigner to come to my country and tell me what it's like to be an American and tell me what I can and cannot say. But when they tell you what you can and cannot say, what they're doing is saying what you can and cannot think. It's not a matter of speech. It's thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's controlling the thought. Well, so you think that, all any of us can do is what we can do. We can't force other people to do things.
No.
And so you're setting out here on some new things, some new challenges for yourself, and you're willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there can inspire people. And this is what we need. This is all we can do. We lead by inspiration. If we are a model for some people who look, say, gee, if he's doing that, if she's doing that, I could do a little more too. That's really all that can
absolutely
be.
Absolutely. Change that part of the world you see out your living room window, and pretty soon that's just one step at a time, one step at a time. And I'm convinced that if we all who are dedicated live, you know, walk the walk, not just talk the talk, live our lives, you know, the way that we talk and do what we can do and are committed to that, I think more will come. And pretty soon we'll wake up someday and realize, hey, there's more of us out here than we thought, and they're actually out there with us, each doing their own part in their own way. And that's something that no amount of thought crimes, no amount of censorship will ever be able to curtail. You see them. You see the cracks in the wall. You see them getting more shrill. You see the thought enforcers. You know, they pass more and more of these silly laws that people essentially ignore, and that's a good thing. But again, I like to be. We have to be, as nationalists care, we have to be optimistic. We have to be.
Yes. Well, yeah, you're right. And it feels good, doesn't it? It feels good to me. If I get down about things, that doesn't feel good. So why do I?
I see people that don't particularly care from my point of view. They're like, I say, you know what? Yes, I'm in a very good mood today because I know time is on my side. I'm going to win. And that just ruins their whole week. And I like to tell them that on a Friday so that it ruins their weekend.
Yeah. And if we do things, we've got 90 seconds, I'm told. Very good to know that. Mm-hmm. All right. Let me just mention that on my website, CarolynJaeger.com, I do have a section on homeschooling, which I put there a long time ago because I've never done any homeschooling, but if I had children, I would do it. I know I would. And there's a good article there on a family mission statement that people might want to read. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of articles. All right. Do you have any last minute comments, Rodney? I'm very glad to have you on today. It's been a good program, and I really thank you for coming on.
Well, I want to thank you, Carolyn, very much for the opportunity to enjoy your program, like I said. And again, the first step that anybody could do is take your children back. If you can't homeschool or you don't think you can, talk to somebody that does. I think that would be a next step, is those of us that do homeschool should form supportive co-ops to help those who want to. But the first step we all should do is take our children back. Our children do not belong to the state. That's communism.
Yeah, all right. Well, unless the state is a state that we like, then we can turn them over. But if it's not, then no, you know, that's it.
Well, not this state.
No, not this one. Not this one. Okay, and if you don't have children, then you have more freedom to do other things. So get busy and do something. I guess, absolutely. So we're just waiting for our music.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.